Three chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There is sufficient evidence that Quebecor World has been practicing unfair labor practices. That was the ruling by two regional directors of the National Labor Relations Board in response to complaints filed at the company's plants in Corinth, Mississippi, and Versailles, Kentucky. The charges claim the Canadian-based company has intimidated, coerced, and discriminated and retaliated against employees who want to form a union. Workers at those two plants and a third plant in Olive Branch, Mississippi, plan to appeal other charges that were dismissed. In addition, there are 31 charges in the pipeline filed by workers at plants in Tennessee and Nevada. Black workers at the Olive Branch plant have also charged the company with racial discrimination.
Sour grape for farm workers seeking a new labor contract at the world's largest wine producer. On Tuesday, the United Farm Workers of America presented representatives of Gallo Wine Ranch in Sonoma County, California, with a petition signed by 25,000 union supporters, asking Gallo to sign a fair labor agreement with 350 UFW employees who've been working without a contract since November 1st of last year. At issue is health care coverage and benefits for independently contracted employees. Gallo gives workers it employs directly health care insurance and benefits, but refuses to offer sick days, vacation pay, or medical benefits to labor contractor workers, which make up about 75% of Gallo's workforce. Farm workers also want a wage increase, Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
Right now, the general labor rate for those workers is only $7.80 an hour. This is one of the most expensive areas to live here in the state of California, so they just can't survive on that wage.
Rodriguez also wants the company to rehire Evierto Ramirez, a farm worker fired after he testified against Gallo for illegally trying to decertify the union in March 2003.
A male City of Montreal food inspector has been told to stop wearing a dress to work. Patrick Leland began wearing the dress to work to draw attention to what he says is discrimination against male employees. His union's collective bargaining agreement after 25 years of service, but men only after 30. Leland, a single father, wants to take early retirement so he can spend more time with his children. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card companies are squeezing consumers now more than ever. Charges for cash advances, late payments, and balance transfers are all on the rise. Last year, the entire credit card industry banked $43 billion from various fee charges, accounting for 35% of industry revenue, nearly double from just 6 years ago. The best way to avoid credit card fee traps is to always read the fine print of your bill and make sure to pay off balances on time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Very soon now, you'll be hearing and reading red, white, and blue editorials about your responsibility to go vote this fall. Every vote counts, they'll cry. Unless, of course, it doesn't. Many of our votes this year will be cast and tallied on corporate-controlled electronic voting machines that keep no trackable record of our ballots. These computers can easily malfunction and be manipulated, meaning they can be used to cheat and steal elections. Here's a question. Shouldn't your vote for president or Congress or whatever be at least as secure as a 25-cent bet you might place in a Las Vegas slot machine? Of course. Yet a New York Times investigation finds that gamblers are more protected than voters. For example, the software to all gambling machines is on file with the state, and the machines are constantly spot-checked by public officials. But corporate purveyors of electronic voting machines consider their software a trade secret, off-limits to public inspection. Also, if a company wants to sell a gambling device, it must submit to a criminal background check and register its employees. To sell computerized voting devices, however, a corporation only has to convince a local election official to buy its stuff. No checks required. Then there's the conflict of interest issue. The technical labs that certify gambling devices must be independent of the makers of those machines. For voting machines, however, the certifying labs are chosen and paid for by the manufacturers. And what if you think you've been cheated? With a slot machine, you have a right to an immediate inspection, and investigators are on call at all hours, empowered to open the machines and find the flaw or fraud. But with electronic voting machines, there are no inspectors on call, and any subsequent inspection is not allowed to open the machines. This is Jim Hightower saying, why should gamblers be more protected than voters? To fight this scam, go to www.verifiedvoting.org. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR, but they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE, or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and license. 3.75% APR, but they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE, or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and license.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
89 days to regime change. Happy Thursday, the 5th of August. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Website www.tomhartman.com. Broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming around the planet, the most intelligent discussion on the web. Our news alert here, Ashcroft considering partial reinstatement of the Bill of Rights. Yes, a reinstatement of the Bill of Rights. Attorney General John Ashcroft announced today that he was considering a partial reinstatement of the Bill of Rights, reversing his long-held opposition to reinstating them in any form. The Attorney General said that partial reopening of the Statue of Liberty had inspired him to cut the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, which said, much like Lady Liberty, the Bill of Rights is an American institution that a lot of our citizens, rightly or wrongly, have a sentimental attachment to. They should be permitted to visit those rights from time to time. Under Mr. Ashcroft's plan, such long-suspended rights as freedom of speech would be in effect from 10 to 5. He said other rights, such as freedom of assembly, would not be officially reinstated. We're still going to have free speech zones, but might be brought back as a premium service of the Constitution available to some Americans for a reasonable monthly fee. Constitutional law expert Harlan Bolton of the University of Minnesota criticized the Ashcroft proposal, saying, quote, while I welcome any return of the Bill of Rights, I seriously doubt that the framers of the Constitution ever imagined that those rights would be subject to summer hours, end quote. Mr. Ashcroft said that Mr. Bolton and others were welcome to criticize his proposal, quote, so long as they don't do it on Tuesday or Thursday, end quote. Elsewhere, presidential candidate Ralph Nader today unveiled his official campaign slogan, Hemp is on the way. Our news report today from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com, with thanks. Did you see the story about John McCain? In today's paper, this was just posted by the Associated Press not an hour ago. You know, there's this by this guy who had been hired by Richard Nixon in, what, 68, 69, something like that, you know, back during the Nixon administration, to debate John Kerry on, you know, various TV programs. And, you know, some of these have been replayed, you know, in various programs. And this guy and his little, you know, merry band with money from, well, right-wing cranks, shall we say? It's, you know, it's this is one of the 527 groups. They don't really have to tell you anything. And they're running these ads saying that John Kerry betrayed the nation during the Vietnam era. I think their real gripe is that he after he came back from Vietnam, he was an anti-war protester. In fact, he was the head of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. Although, you know, there's all this innuendo in it. So here's the story from the Associated Press by Ron Fournier, or Fournier. Republican Senator John McCain, a former prisoner of war in Vietnam, called an ad criticizing John Kerry's military service, quote, dishonest and dishonorable, end quote, and urged the White House to condemn it as well. This was this morning. McCain said in an interview with the Associated Press, it was the same kind of deal that was pulled on me, referring to his bitter Republican primary fight with President Bush. Here's McCain saying these guys are doing the same thing to John Kerry that they did to John McCain, to him. The 60-second ad features Vietnam veterans who accused the Democratic presidential nominee of lying about his decorated Vietnam War record and betraying his fellow veterans by later opposing the conflict. Larry Thurlow, one of the veterans, says in the ad, when the chips were down, you could not count on John Kerry. The ad, scheduled to air in a few markets in Ohio, West Virginia, and Wisconsin, was produced by Stevens Reed, Curcio, and Potom, the same team that produced McCain's ads in 2000. McCain said of his former advisors, I wish they hadn't done it. I don't know if they knew all the facts. Asked if the White House knew about the ad or helped from... Isn't this incredible? This is absolutely tragic. Absolutely tragic. McCain said, you know, talking about the South Carolina primary when Bush was running a rumor campaign against him. And it notes McCain's supporters have never forgiven the Bush team. McCain said that's all in the past to him, but he's speaking out against the anti-Kerry ad because he believes it's bad for the political system. Quote, it reopens all the old wounds of the Vietnam War, which I spent the last 35 years trying to heal, he said. I deplore this kind of politics, said John McCain. I think the ad is dishonest and deplorable. As it is, none of these individuals served on the boat that Kerry commanded. Many of his crew have testified to his courage under fire. I think John Kerry served honorably in Vietnam. And then, you know, to keep his job as a Republican, McCain adds, I think George Bush served honorably in the Texas Air National Guard during the Vietnam War. He didn't say whether he believed in flying saucers. McCain himself spent more than 5 years a prisoner of war, goes on to add. Of the Jim Rasmussen, he's the guy who had introduced Kerry at the Democratic National Convention, an Army veteran who was saved by Kerry, said there were only six crewmates who served with Kerry on his boat, five support his candidacy, and one is dead. So 100%, except for the dead guy, of the people who served with John Kerry are working to get him elected. So you got a bunch of guys who were in Vietnam who didn't know Kerry, never saw him, didn't work with him, weren't under his command, and they're attacking him with a multi-million dollar ad campaign. This is tragic. This is absolutely tragic. You know, Thursday is our Everything You Know Is Wrong day. And usually we do it in the second hour of the program. I'm going to do it in the first hour today. And, in fact, here's our
wrong. But you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Well, maybe. You know, there was a time when you didn't know what you didn't know. You didn't know what you didn't know. You didn't know really anything because you were just first born. And then pretty soon you figured out that there were things that you needed to know that you didn't know, like how to get your diaper changed. And you figured out ways to get, you know, what you needed done. fun because you knew that you didn't know how to, you know, if you figured out how to do it. And as you get older, you figured out that there were a lot of things you didn't know that you didn't know, and you didn't know even that you needed to know until you discovered that you didn't know them. And then you knew that you didn't know them, but you needed to know, so, you know, you got to. And then there was that time when there was nothing you didn't know, right? Called the teenage years. And then as we get older and wiser, we discover that there's more and more that we don't know that we don't know, and that we know that we know that we know that we need to know, but we don't know what it is that we don't know. So how can you? And so that's what I want to talk about for a little bit here today. Later in the day, by the way, in our second hour, we're going to get into why are conservatives deserting George W. Bush to keep their ideology intact. This is a fascinating phenomenon. And in the third hour, we're going to explore some of the some of George W. Bush's true signature achievements. You will be surprised. Anyhow, what we think we know. We think one of the things that we think that we know is that the mess that the world is in is something that we can fix with technology or politics or money, you know, whatever. Now, just for a minute, think about where you were yesterday at this time. You know, in the 24 hours since yesterday, what you've done. In that 24 hours, in the 24 hours since this time yesterday, around 50,000 people on this planet have died of starvation. 38,000 of them were children. In the 24 hours since this time yesterday, according to Harvard biologist E.O. Wilson, 120 species have gone extinct. Not an individual plant or an entire line. The normal rate of species loss is one every 4 years. It's similar to the replacement rate. There has been such a rapid rate of species loss that we're experiencing now that Richard Leakey, the famous Leakey anthropologist family, wrote a book about it called The Sixth Extinction. He says the last extinction, the fifth extinction, which occurred during the Jurassic period when the dinosaurs were wiped out, corresponded with a very rapid decline in species, the number of species on Earth. And he says we are looking at a similar decline right now, and we, the animal at the top of the food chain, may well be setting up a disaster for ourselves. In the 24 hours since this time yesterday, fully 13 million tons of toxic, largely cancer-causing waste materials have been put into the air, water, and soil of our planet. In the 24 hours since this time yesterday, over 200,000 acres of rainforest, the lungs of our planet, have been destroyed. We have a situation on Earth right now where over 1 billion people have tuberculosis. It's become the number one most rapidly spreading and deadly disease on Earth. With every second, with every tick of the clock, someone dies of TB, a disease that is spread as easily as the common cold. We live in a world where fully 3 billion people, half the population of the planet, live on the equivalent, more or less, of $2 a day. This, according to James Wolfensohn, the president of the World Bank, is, in his words, a time bomb waiting to go off in our children's faces. What can we do about this? In order to solve this problem, we have to understand what caused it. We'll get into that right after this. This is Tom Hartman with you. Talk radio for...
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers. Instead of sitting on hold with tech support, Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted...
No way! You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder.
A total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zone.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. A few years ago, I was down in Bogota, Colombia. For the last 25 years, more or less, I've worked with an international relief organization based in Germany called Kinder- und Jugendhilfswerk-Salem. And we set up a program in the La Paz, Bogota. And we had started out, actually, the original... It's a program for the... You know, it's basically kind of a school for kids in the slum who can't afford to go to school. And we had started before that to Elizabeth, actually, the woman who was down there running the program. She's a German who was married to a Colombian who was, you know, living there. Had started out trying to work with these street children. There are these kids in Bogota, and you find this in many of the major cities in South America. And well, not just South America, but this particular iteration of the phenomena, in my experience, is largely something that you see in South America, the full extent of it. And these street children, they call them Los Gamines, or maybe it's a Los, you know, I don't know if it's a masculine or feminine word, but anyhow, which is the little animals, or the rats. And these kids have taken over parts of the town, both above ground and much of it underground, and they will literally kill you for your clothing. Masculine or feminine word, but anyhow, which is the little animals or the rats. And these kids have taken over parts of the town, both above ground and most and much of it underground. And they will literally kill you for your clothing. It's a little Peter Pan society. Well, it's not little. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of kids. People take babies down there, unwanted pregnancy babies. This in a city where abortion is illegal and where birth control is, or at least was, this when I was down there in this particular instance, this was, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago. And at that time, you couldn't buy even condoms in pharmacies in most cases, not because they were illegal, but because the influence of the Catholic Church was so strong, the pharmacists were afraid of burning in hell forever. And introduced to someone who was the brother of a woman who was the secretary of one of the people that was one of the donors to our program, kind of a long story, but anyhow, who was part of a group called Las Cazadores, which I believe means the deer hunters or the hunter. And they would go out at night with high-powered rifles, and most of these hunt clubs, many of them have, like, you know, off-duty cops as members, and hunt street children for sport and take pictures. And in fact, I had a picture on my website for a while of a dead street kid that had been shot by them. This is a demonstration of the crisis of population that we're facing in the world. It's not so bad, frankly, in the United States, but all around the world. And when you understand what kind of cultural thinking brings, solutions become apparent, and they're not the solutions that most people think are going to solve these problems. I'll get into that right after this. 29 and a half minutes after the of cultural thinking brings solutions become apparent, and they're not the solutions that most people think are going to solve these problems. I'll get into that right after this. 29 and a half minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There is sufficient evidence that Quebecor World has been practicing company has racial discrimination.
Sour grape for farm workers seeking a new world's largest wine producer. On Tuesday, the United Farm Workers of America presented representatives of Gallo Wine Ranch in Sonoma County, California, with a petition signed by 25,000 union supporters, asking Gallo to sign a fair labor agreement with 350 UFW employees who've been working without a contract since November 1st of last year. At issue is health care coverage and benefits for independently contracted employees. Gallo gives workers it employs directly health care insurance and benefits, but refuses to offer sick days, vacation pay, or medical benefits to labor contractor workers, which make up about 75% of Gallo's workforce. Farm workers also want a wage increase, Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
Right now, the general labor rate for those workers is only $7.08 an hour. This is one of the most expensive areas to live here in the state of California, so they just can't survive on that wage.
Rodriguez also wants the company to rehire Evierto Ramirez, a farm worker fired after he testified against Gallo for illegally trying to decertify the union in March 2003.
A male City of Montreal food inspector has been told to stop wearing a dress to work. Patrick Leland began wearing the dress to work to draw attention to what he says is discrimination against male employees. His union's collective bargaining agreement says that women can take retirement after 25 years of service, but men only after 30. Leland, a single father, wants to take early retirement so he can spend more time with his children. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card companies are squeezing consumers now more than ever. Charges for cash advances, late payments, and balance transfers are all on the rise. Last year, the entire credit card industry banked $43 billion from various fee charges, accounting for 35% of industry revenue, nearly double from just 6 years ago. The best way to avoid credit card fee traps is to always read the fine print of your bill and make sure to pay off balances on time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Got a song about a soldier riding somewhere on a train. Empty sleep into his shoulder.
And welcome back, minutes before the hour. Here's the big picture. From the time of the earliest appearance of humans on this planet that anybody can figure out, you know, somewhere between 150 and 250,000 years ago, up until the time of Christ, for example, 2,000 years ago, the population of the world grew from, you know, 50, 60, 70,000, which was, we were fairly stable at that level in Eastern Africa for some time, up to about a quarter of a million. I'm sorry, a quarter of a billion, 250 million people. And we reached that around 2,000 years ago. Around 1,000 years ago, we hit a half a billion, 500 million. And in 1800, we hit 1 billion. So all of human history, all produced 1 billion people. You got that? I mean, 250,000 years of human history, in 1800, 1 billion people. The second billion people didn't take 250,000 years. The second billion people only took 130 years. 1930, we hit 2 billion people. The third billion didn't take 130 years, it only took 30 years. We hit 3 billion people in 1960. 30 years. 1930, we hit 2 billion people. The third billion didn't take 130 years, it only took 30 years. We hit 3 billion people in 1960. I remember 1960, the year John Kennedy was inaugurated. I was a kid. I was 9, 10 years old. And I was 9 years old. And there were half as many people on the planet, fewer than half, actually, as there are today. So our third billion took 30 years up to 1960. Our fourth billion took 17 years, 1970, must have been 14 years, 1974. The fifth billion, 1987, 13 years. The sixth billion, 1999, is that 11 or 12 years? We're now working on our seventh billion. We're adding as many people as the planet produced from the dawn of human civilization, or the dawn of humanity, to 1800. Every 10 or 11 years now. We just did that. If we just put bubblegum machines on the corner of every third world city and fill them full of birth control pills and make them so they're free, you don't even have to put a penny in them, that would solve the problem. Well, unfortunately, it wouldn't. There are countries in the world where birth control is freely available, and yet they still have exploding populations, many in the Middle East, for example. So that's not a solution. Or it's not the solution. Certainly there's a problem. There's about 750 million families in the world, for sure. A little less than a billion, a little fewer than a billion, probably more than that. But, I mean, those are the numbers that are, you know, why actively want to have access to birth control and don't. And I'm not talking about abortion here. We're talking just big condoms, you know, birth control pills. But that's part of a solution, but it's not the solution. And then there are those who say, well, there's an economic solution to this. If we just raised everybody's standard of living of the United States, the American middle class, because the American middle class, by and large, has a zero population growth. The middle class of Europe, of Western Europe, zero population growth. And so the economic theorists say, it seems that when people hit that middle class area, they, you know, population stabilizes and they only have two children, or 2.2, I guess, is the, just replacement rate. Because, you know, there's some who die early and all that kind of thing. But anyhow, they only have two kids per family and or fewer, and you have zero population growth or even negative population growth. Interesting, for example, Italy, a largely middle-class nation. Of all the European nations, of all the nations in the world, Italy, on a per capita basis, has the highest use of birth control in the world. The home of the Vatican. I'm sure this just makes the Vatican cringe every time they think about it. And they've had negative population growth for many years. I don't know if it is this year, but, you know, many of the last 20, 30, 40 years have actually seen negative population growth in many Western European countries, including Italy. So these folks say, well, it's all about economics. If we could just raise everybody in the world up to the standard of living in the American middle class. The problem with this is twofold. Number one, if all 6 billion of us lived the lifestyle of somebody at the poverty level in America, at, you know, roughly $15,000 a year for a family of four, if everybody in the world lived at that level of consumption, it would require four planet Earths to provide the raw materials. It's physically not possible. There's not enough oil, there's not enough steel, there's not enough plastic, there's just not enough. And secondly, we know that there are nations where people are actually wealthier than we are. Again, for example, many of the Middle Eastern nations, the oil-rich Middle Eastern nations, where people are given $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year simply for being a citizen of the country out of the oil revenue. And instead of having zero population growth, they're having population explosions. So what is it? What is it? Well, this is where I get to this. This is the key to this whole understanding, this whole thing. It is not about technology, whether it's the technology of science, of birth control, or the technology of economics. It's about story. The problems of the world come about because of the stories we tell ourselves, and the solutions will come about when those stories change. Now, I realize that sounds like a huge generalization, but let me illustrate. We know that the one variable that does affect population growth with absolute certainty is not access to birth control, because there are tribal people all over the world who've never heard of a condom and they have zero population growth and they don't practice infanticide. And it's not economics. They're living what you would call a very poor lifestyle by Western standards. What it is, when women have relatively equal power with men, population stabilizes, and it does it in a single generation as soon as that story changes. And when women have dramatic, now, of course, no place on earth, arguably Iceland, I suppose, but other than that, no place on earth do women have absolutely equal power with men. But there's some critical threshold when it gets close enough that women take control of their reproduction. They say, yeah, that's it. One baby, two babies, that's it. Whether it's Western civilization or whether it's tribal societies in the jungles of Brazil, when women have relatively equal power with men, population stabilizes instantly. And when women are bought and sold like cattle, when women are held under the oppression, under the subjection of men, population explodes, regardless of access to birth control, regardless of access to wealth. And that comes out of a story. We have this story in our culture which Jerry Falwell will enthusiastically tell you, and Socrates would have told you his variation on it. Socrates' variation on it was Pandora. All the problems of the world were caused by a woman named Pandora who was overly curious. She had to open that box, and all the problems came out. And that justified the oppression of women for the ancient Greeks. And Jerry Falwell's story is, no, it was a woman named Eve. And she ate the apple, and therefore women should, as Paul said in the New Testament, women should sit in the back of the church with their heads covered and be quiet. And they can't be priests in the Catholic Church. They shouldn't have power, is how that story goes, because of that responsibility. This is a story. It's just a story. And when the story changes, then the culture changes. And when the culture changes, then the solutions become obvious. And so, you know, the everything you know is wrong segment about this is, you know, you say, well, you know, how do we solve the problems of pollution? How do we solve the problems of political corruption? How do we solve the problem of you know, killer diseases? How do we solve the problems of population? We do it by changing our fundamental stories. We've got a couple of toxic stories built into our culture that arguably were useful 2, 3, 4, 5,000 years ago. I mean, sociologists say these were actually useful stories back then because they led to population explosions, which allowed one tribe to wipe out another tribe. And that's why the stories continued through the years. I mean, setting aside any morality, just, you know, looking at it sociologically. But they're not useful anymore because we have enough people now. In fact, we have a few too many. And so you look at some of the stories. One of the stories, obviously, that I just mentioned, that you know, women are the cause of all problems and therefore should be oppressed, that needs to be reversed. We need to wake up from that. It wasn't Eve's fault. Another one, the idea that humans are somehow different from and unique from nature. This is, you know, clearly a story that George Bush and his buddies with the Clear Skies Initiative and, who needs to protect an endangered species? It's clearly a story that they believe, that humans were somehow created separate from everything else in creation, uniquely given the power to control and manipulate everything in creation and given responsibility for everything in creation and given some divine guidance in that context, at least some of our leaders. So when George Bush spoke to the Amish a couple of weeks ago and he said, God speaks through me, you know, it's just a reflection of that story. Well, the fact is we're not separate from nature. Nature will ultimately always win. It's absolutely amazing. We live in Vermont, and on the hillside behind our house, we had cut out a bunch of trees that were at risk of falling in the house and just, you know, cleared an area. And this was 3 years ago. Now it's all grown back up again. It's like you just can't keep nature back. And we are part of nature, and this is, you know, fundamentally, this is the difference between the story that the environmentalists carry, which is, hey, it's not about being benevolent. It's not, there's this kind of small subset of environmentalists who say, you know, we need to keep the Grand Canyon beautiful so that our children can look at it. Well, that's more of that kind of egoistic, you know, I, Claudius, we humans stuff. Now we need the problem, and then but the main difference in worldview between people who call themselves environmentalists and people who don't, who scorn and ridicule environmentalists, is that the people in that latter category think that they're somehow separate from nature. And sometimes it seems that way. You live in New York City. I mean, how much nature is there around you? Well, oddly enough, 3 meals a day, nature comes visiting, right? Food doesn't grow in a vacuum, but people somehow don't notice that. But the environmentalists get it. Hey, we are part of nature. another story, another toxic story in our culture that we need to wake up from. Here's another one. We're separate from each other. About 4 or 5 years ago, I was invited to participate in an event called the Synthesis Dialogues in Dharamsala, India, at the home of the Dalai Lama. And there were about 24 of us, as I recall, who were invited. And we spent 5 days with His Holiness, about 6 hours every day, sitting and talking about how to create a world that works. It was a fascinating conversation. There were physicists. Fred Allen Wolf, you know, the famous physicist, was there, and religious figures. Wayne Teasdale, Brother Wayne Teasdale, the famous Catholic who wrote The Mystic Heart, was there. And it was just some absolutely remarkable people. And at one point, we all, this was when the Dalai Lama wasn't with us. One evening, we got in this discussion about how, you know, we really ought to do something to help the people in Tibet. Because here we are in India, you know, he's in exile in India, just on the other side of the Himalayas from Tibet. And every day, somebody would arrive, nearly every day, you know, a couple of people would arrive who had literally crossed over the mountains from Tibet and fled. And typically, you know, one person would make it out of 5 or 10 who set out. I mean, they got robbed by bandits, they got eaten by lions, they got just, you know. So we said, we ought to do something. And we got in this big argument about whether or not we were going to get political. But anyhow, at the very end, we sat down with the Dalai Lama and said, we are, you know, we between the 24 of us, we've got millions of people who read our work and listen to us and whatnot. We're willing to endorse a boycott of Chinese goods until China stops murdering Tibetans, because they've murdered over 1 million Tibetans. And he thought about it for a minute, and he made the most amazing comment. I'll share it with you right after this. Stick around 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, Snowing Global Transformation. Tom Hartman, his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe, the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800.
Wealth before the poor. How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world. world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Do you remember the smell of burning leaves?
I remember when the Environmental Protection Agency protected our environment.
Well, remember when one 40-hour week job was enough to support a family?
Yes, when the Department of Labor labored, well, for the laborers.
Remember when the news programs gave us the news instead of promos?
Was that when the Federal Communications Commission protected communications from monopolies?
Huh? Yeah. Oh, remember when big oil didn't control the White House?
When the Department did it on energy.
Not just oil.
Right. I even remember when there weren't 45 million Americans without health insurance.
Me too. Mm-hmm. And when a Medicare bill for seniors meant help for seniors, not for big drug companies and HMOs.
Uh-huh. When welfare was primarily a safety net for the poor, not profit for the big corporations.
That was back when the Internal Revenue Service served the revenue stream by taxing the rich their fair share.
And when Social Security was secure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when the so-called intelligence agencies were free to report their findings without fear of offending the White House?
You mean back when our intelligence was intelligent?
Yeah. It seems we are imperfect people, which is why we need controls over the too powerful and the too rich. Isn't that the way it used to be?
Yes, when corporations only ran corporations, not the government.
Back when federal regulators actually regulated.
When the press pressed for the truth.
When the foxes weren't in charge of the hen house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember those times? Then you remember democracy can go there again. But you have to vote.
Yes, vote. Before the electronic voting machines make it impossible to assure that your vote is counted. And in the process, make democracy just a fading.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. So anyhow, this is turning into a longer story. Hey, we said to the Dalai Lama, you know, we will lead this this boycott of Chinese goods until China stops murder, because China has murdered over a million Tibetans, and they're just aggressively, actively wiping out Tibetan culture. And he basically said that he would not go along with that, because he said if that action causes the death of even one child in China, it wouldn't be worth the price would be too high for the freeing of his own people. And I got this sudden aha that all my life I had viewed, you know, for all the talk about, you know, we're all one and all that kind of stuff, I'd really viewed us as, you know, there's them out there and there's us in here. And I'd drawn this circle in the sand around us. And the Dalai Lama came along and just, you know, pulled out his little whisk broom and brushed away the line and said, sorry, there's no us, there's no, you know, there's no them. It's all us. There's no circle. And that's why, that's one of the reasons why. Because I think the breaking down the story that there are good people and bad people, those evil conservatives, you know, we must hate them, or, you know, the conservatives, those evil liberals, they must be hated. Those are very toxic stories. And that's why I will strongly disagree with conservatives and Republicans and yet respect their humanity. Because they really think they're doing the best thing. They believe their slogans. They believe in the religion of the so-called free market. They really, you know, they're utopianists. These neocons like Wolfowitz and Feith and these guys. See, culture is just our stories. Politics is just our stories. And what you find is that in politics, it's really dueling stories. Wolfowitz and Feith and these guys, they really believe that you can go into a country with guns blazing and install democracy. I mean, we're still working on it. It's taken us 220-some-odd years. Clearly, they don't get it, in my opinion. But that's what they believe. So it's dueling stories. So the takeaway message from this today is the most important work that we have to do in changing the world, changing each other, changing America for the better, is to change the core stories underneath it all. Who really are we? What really are we all about? And that's the core divide between conservative and liberal, in my opinion. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Transforming the World by Revitalizing Democracy. A great story.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There is sufficient evidence that Quebecor World has been practicing unfair labor practices. That was the ruling by two regional directors of the National Labor Relations Board in response to complaints filed at the company's plants in Corinth, Mississippi, and Versailles, Kentucky. The charges claim the Canadian-based company has intimidated, coerced, and discriminated and retaliated against employees who want to form a union. Workers at those two plants and a third plant in Olive Branch, Mississippi, plan to appeal other charges that were dismissed. In addition, there are 31 charges in the pipeline filed by workers at plants in Tennessee and Nevada. Black workers at the Olive Branch plant have also charged the company with racial discrimination.
Sour grape for farm workers seeking a new labor contract at the world's largest wine producer. On Tuesday, the United Farm Workers of America presented representatives of Gallo Wine Ranch in Sonoma County, California, with a petition signed by 25,000 union supporters, asking Gallo to sign a fair labor agreement with 350 UFW employees who've been working without a contract since November 1st of last year. At issue is health care coverage and benefits for independently contracted employees. Gallo gives workers it employs directly health care insurance and benefits, but refuses to offer sick days, vacation pay, or medical benefits to labor contractor workers, which make up about 75% of Gallo's workforce. Farm workers also want a wage increase, Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
Right now, the general labor rate for those workers is only $7.80 an hour. This is one of the most expensive areas to live here in the state of California, so they just can't survive on that wage.
Rodriguez also wants the company to rehire Evierto Ramirez, a farm worker fired after he testified against Gallo for illegally trying to decertify the union in March 2003.
A male City of Montreal food inspector has been told to stop wearing a dress to work. Patrick Leland began wearing the dress to work to draw attention to what he says is discrimination against male employees. His union's collective bargaining agreement says that women can take retirement after 25 years of service, but men only after 30. Leland, a single father, wants to take early retirement so he can spend more time with his children. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card companies are squeezing consumers now more than ever. Charges for cash advances, late payments, and balance transfers are all on the rise. Last year, the entire credit card industry banked $43 billion from various fee charges, accounting for 35% of industry revenue, nearly double from just 6 years ago. The best way to avoid credit card fee traps is to always read the fine print of your bill and make sure to pay off balances on time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
The official line of the powers that be is that corporations simply do what their customers want. It's nothing but supply and demand in action, they tell us. The glorious free market in excelsis Deo. Nice theory, but reality is another story. For example, thanks to insider tapes from Enron that George Bush's Justice Department was recently forced to release, we can hear the free market thoughts of one Enron trader talking to another about all the money they stole from those poor grandmothers in California by manipulating the energy market in 2001. Yeah, Grandma Millie, man, but she's the one who couldn't figure out how to blankety-blank vote on the butterfly ballot. Yeah, now she wants her blankety-blank money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her blankety-blank for blankety-blank $250 a megawatt hour. Enron executives used market manipulation techniques that they colorfully dubbed Sidewinder, Russian Roulette, Ping Pong, and Donkey Punch. Charming, huh? Other Enroners brag on the tapes about cheating still more poor grandmothers, about shutting down an Enron-controlled power plant to drive up electricity prices, about how awesome it will be if Enron's honcho, Kenny Boy Lay, is chosen by his pal Bush to be the new energy secretary. Alas for Kenny Boy, Enron was crashing, and he was too politically hot to get the energy job, but George still helped him out. For the first several months of his administration, he deliberately forestalled demands to impose price controls to stop Enron's gouging of West Coast consumers. In that time, the corporation essentially stole billions of dollars from its unsuspecting customers, and Kenny Boy himself was able to bail out with a $100 million golden parachute. This is Jim Hightower saying, corporations today don't operate in a free market. They operate in a greed market, aided and abetted by the political puppets they put in office.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Example is First Colony Preferred Best Colony 10-year term policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Having a fascinating conversation here in the chat room about the Federalists. What happened with the Federalists? Didn't the Federalists want strong central government? Actually, the Federalists originally, in the day of George Washington, see, they coming out of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, we're all Federalists. What did that mean? It meant that they wanted a federal government, as opposed to operating under the Articles of Confederation that we had been operating under before, where basically every state had tremendous autonomy. They wanted to slightly diminish that autonomy, but they still wanted it to be a fairly weak central government. And it was during the Adams administration that the shift happened. The Alien and Sedition Acts is a great example of it, where the Federalists started being basically the power of strong central government, and the Democratic Republicans, now known as the Democratic Party, which was brought up by Thomas Jefferson, said, no, we should have relatively weak federal government. And this is what led in one of many things, but it is one of the main things that led to the death of the Federalist Party in the 1820s and the rise of the Whigs, which took their place. So anyhow, interesting. Yeah, Narlodius says, I like history when it supports my malcontentions. Yeah, well said. Speaking of misunderstandings, this kind of falls into the category of either it's really a sad story, or we now know that, we've always known that George Bush doesn't read. Now we know what he watches on TV. He must be watching South Park. On June 17th, at a Right to Life rally, Newsweek just reported this, in Tampa, Florida, he said, and I quote, quoting the President of the United States, we must always remember that all human beings begin life as feces. A feces is a living being in the eyes of God, who has endowed that feces with all the rights and God-giving blessings of any other human being. End quote. Newsweek goes on to add, the audience listened in disbelief as the president repeated his error at least a dozen times before realizing, maybe Andy Card ran up and whispered to him like he did on 9/11, before realizing that he had used the word feces when he meant to say fetus. That's, yeah, okay, wait a minute, aren't you preaching separation? Well, you know, I can have compassion for George Bush and be horrified by him. Yesterday, somebody had called and asked if I knew of any websites that chronicled the violations of the United States Constitution by the Bush administration. And my answer was that I didn't right off the top of my head, but it always amazes me the quality of the people who are listening to this program. And I got several emails from people making suggestions. I think probably the best one was from Kim in Denver, who suggested a website called 1000reasons.org, www.1000reasons.org. And if you go to that website and click on the word juxtapositions up at the very top, Kim suggests you will find the answer to that question. And I looked at it last night, and I thought it was a pretty good start on that. Pretty good start on that. It's a website I didn't even know existed. And it's remarkable. Another bit of, email or whatever people post on our website to our message board. It's generally actually one of the better ways to reach me. Or you can email me. And I got this email from Paul. He doesn't, he's in Long Beach, California. And he says, I'm a fan of your show, but an ad I heard today telling us not to vote Alf Nader is offensive. Funny how all those Democratic apologists still fail to blame the 7 million Democrats who voted for Bush in 2000. Guess they can't look in the mirror and admit their own candidate sucked rocks. I suppose they'll blame Nader once again when they lose due to the fact that they nominated a sucky candidate who's got no balls to confront corporate rule. Please yank the ad until the advertiser can bring truth to their advertising. Thanks, Paul. Well, Paul, number one, I don't think that Ralph Nader would go along with your suggestion that we censor a message on the airwaves. Probably his Republican backers would support that. But I think Ralph Nader would be of the opinion that folks ought to be able to free to express their opinion. And secondly, if you want to purchase and run, I would be more than pleased to take your money and put the ads on the air. Or our local affiliates, however you want to do it. This is, after all, commercial radio. And in my opinion, there ain't nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing. Here's another email, this one from John. I don't have a city for him. He says, they accuse Kerry of changing his mind, flip-flopping. At the same time, they make a virtue of the current president's stay the course and I'd do it again with Iraq mentality. The fact is that the inability to change and stubbornness are faults. And then he gives this great quote. I mean, this is just great. This from Marcus Aurelius. Remember Marcus Aurelius? In Latin class, I remember studying Marcus Aurelius. In his Meditations. And 2,000 years ago, Marcus Aurelius said, or nearly 2,000 years ago, said, "If any man can convince and show me that I do not think or act right, I will gladly change, for I seek truth by which no man was ever injured. But he is injured who abides in his error and ignorance." End of quote from Marcus Aurelius. And then John adds how much more true that is in our time. It's something to admire in Carey, that he's willing to seek the truth rather than just be stubborn. Just be absolutely stubborn. It's time for this is great. A caught you doing something right. You know, the idea that we spend a lot of time. I do on this program. Everybody does all the time. You know, catching people doing things wrong. I think it's important once in a while to say, hey, we caught you doing something right. Well done. This Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are producing power from paint fumes. And process could save firm millions. This is from the Detroit News. A groundbreaking system that produces electricity from the toxic fumes of painting cars. Ford's going to install the technology at its Michigan truck plant in Wayne, Michigan, just outside of Detroit. It could be worth millions of dollars to Ford in cost savings and licensing fees. Not to mention the fact that it's better for the environment and it causes us to use less oil. Mark Werrett, the principal environmental engineer at Ford and co-developer of the system, says, "We're going to make a big step here. It ultimately could provide a third of the plant's power." An auto plant off the fumes, because the fumes are, you know, the fumes are volatile. They have hydrocarbons in them. They can burn. Right? You ever light a match and spray a can of paint in front of it? Stuff we do as kids, right? Anyhow, yes, they can burn. I can tell you from firsthand experience. And Ford and partner Detroit Edison have filed to have the system patented and hope to license it to others. Well done, Ford Motor Company. Now, on the flip side of this, on the I think we have a problem here. Maybe we should, beam up Mr. Ashcroft, the guy who couldn't defeat a dead man in an election and so was made Attorney General of the United States. The American Library Association, I got this from my daughter, actually, who works in a business that provides services to libraries. And the American Library Association has learned that the Department of Justice, that's Ashcroft, you know, has approached libraries and said, please destroy 5 federal publications. Not just, you know, like take these things off the shelf. They want them to take them out and destroy them. Destroy them. Now, what are these books that are so obscene, so dangerous, that you and I should not have access to them? Well, it turns out they're copies of federal laws. Federal laws? John Ashcroft doesn't want us to know about federal laws? What laws could it be that he doesn't want us to know about? Well, to quote from the statement from the American Library Association President-elect Michael Gorman, the topics addressed in the named documents include information on how citizens can retrieve items that may have been confiscated by the government during an investigation. You get that? The American Library Association. See, don't mess with librarians. I mean, Michael Moore's book, Stupid White Men, would not be in print if it wasn't for librarians. Don't mess with them. The ALA has submitted a Freedom of Information Act request and is basically telling librarians, I'm not quoting from them, but this is the gist of it, to ignore what John Ashcroft is saying. They say, according to Policy 72, whatever that is, something librarians know all about, written authorization from the superintendent of documents is required to remove any documents. To this date, no such written authorization in hard copy has been issued. But John Ashcroft does not want you to know what the law says about how you can get back your own stuff if it was seized from you by the government in the course of an investigation. How you can legally do it. I mean, isn't this amazing? They want to take these out of all public libraries so that the only people who will have access to these particular federal laws passed by, you know, our elected representatives, paid for with our tax dollars, the only people who will have access to them are people who have access to law libraries. This is wrong. I mean, this is just wrong. Which brings us to why conservatives are deserting George W. Bush. They are fleeing now. And I'm by conservative, see, they are fleeing like rats off a sinking ship. By conservatives, I mean the real, you know, classic, they actually believe Edmund Burke and William F. Buckley's early writings, you know, the Edmund Burke from 200 years ago, 200 and some odd years ago, nearly 300 years ago, and all the way up to the modern conservatives. Here we have in the New York Press an article by William Brick, B-R-Y-K, about, from Volume 17, Issue 31, the New York Press, about how American conservatives should react to the presidency of George W. Bush. And it's a remarkable insight into the conservative worldview and into what some, what I would call ethical conservatives, that is people who actually believe their ideology and are willing to act on the basis of their ideology rather than simple political expediency, are doing. And it's fascinating in that it exposes the difference between liberal and conservative ideology in a way that makes sense, and it demonstrates that George W. Bush is not a conservative, he is a corporatist, what Mussolini called a fascist. And it's a just extraordinary. It lays this out. I'll share it with you right after this. Stick around, 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics. Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. Millions of Americans suffering from diseases like 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life.
To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Start me up. Start me up.
Well, once again, the extraordinary quality of the people who listen to this program and who stream it around the planet. Tom Hartman here with you, by the way. Our program brought to you by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, CASCR.org. Futurist Benjamin Krim, 888-242-8272, and Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, for all things Macintosh. Anyhow, the extraordinary quality of the people who are listening, and of Shelby, who runs RadioPower.org, which is our main web stream out there. Shelby lets us know. The Bush feces story that I opened the hour with has been discredited. It's apparently a vanishing hitchhiker story. So please don't pass it along. And I apologize to you and to George W. if I have unwittingly been an agent of misinformation. Always try and keep it straight here. Try and, you know, keep it clean and honest. And apparently I got it wrong. So anyhow, to sum up, this from the New York Press. Anything beyond the limited powers expressly delegated by the people under the Constitution to their government for certain limited purposes creates the danger of tyranny. This is the conservative position, and I agree with that. And I think, frankly, liberals agree with that. That government shouldn't take there are people who think that the Constitution gives rights to people. Wrong. They say, well, you know, the Bill of Rights grants rights to people. Clarence Thomas, for example, in a recent Supreme Court case, said, he was quoting a 1964 case, I believe it was called Griswold versus the State of Connecticut. It was something versus the State of Connecticut, anyway. And it was a case in which the Supreme Court decided that it was illegal for Connecticut, it was unconstitutional for Connecticut to have a law which said that if a married couple had condoms in their bedroom, it was a crime for which they could be put in prison. Yes? That was the law in Connecticut in 1964 and in much of the United States. Most of the United States. And that Supreme Court case broke down the law that many religious among us would like to see put behind much of the anti-abortion movement is actually an anti-birth control movement. In any case, that Supreme Court case opened the door to the pill being legal, which then opened the door to, you know, some would say the excesses, I would say the freedoms of the 60s and 70s and 80s and today, right to this day. And yeah, there was a little overcompensation, I think. But looking back on it now. But in any case, Clarence Thomas was quoting one of the justices in that case who dissented, who said, there is no absolute right to privacy guaranteed in the Constitution. And the fact of the matter is the word privacy does not appear in the Constitution of the United States. The Fourth Amendment doesn't say you have a right to privacy. It says that your right to be secure in your papers and the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And, but the court has concluded. Now, the reason they didn't use the word privacy back then is because privacy meant going to the bathroom. It's where the word privy comes from. You won't find the word privacy in any of the writings of the founders. Instead, they talked about the word security, which meant what we mean by privacy today. But Clarence Thomas hadn't figured that out. But the bigger thing that Clarence Thomas hadn't figured out is he is still operating on the assumption that the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, or at least the first 8 amendments of the Constitution, grant rights to human beings. They don't. They simply state rights. But the Constitution doesn't give us rights. The Constitution limits power of government. So, this is a position that conservatives and liberals agree on. Okay, so we stand there now. We'll begin at that point. Now, then we get into the conservatives' argument with George W. Bush. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There is sufficient evidence that Quebecor World has been practicing unfair labor practices. That was the ruling by two regional directors of the National Labor Relations Board in response to complaints filed at the company's plants in Corinth, Mississippi, and Versailles, Kentucky. The charges claim the Canadian-based company has intimidated, coerced, and discriminated and retaliated against employees who want to form a union. Workers at those two plants and a third plant in Olive Branch, Mississippi, plan to appeal other charges that were dismissed. In addition, there are 31 charges in the pipeline filed by workers at plants in Tennessee and Nevada. Black workers at the Olive Branch plant have also charged the company with racial discrimination.
Sour grape for farm workers seeking a new labor contract at the world's largest wine producer. On Tuesday, the United Farm Workers of America presented representatives of Gallo Wine Ranch in Sonoma County, California, with a petition signed by 25,000 union supporters, asking Gallo to sign a fair labor agreement with 350 UFW employees who've been working without a contract since November 1st of last year. At issue is healthcare coverage and benefits for independently contracted employees. Gallo gives workers it employs directly health care insurance and benefits, but refuses to offer sick days, vacation pay, or medical benefits to labor contractor workers, which make up about 75% of Gallo's workforce. Farm workers also want a wage increase, Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
Right now, the general labor rate for those workers is only $7.08 an hour. This is one of the most expensive areas to live here in the state of California, so they just can't survive on that wage.
Rodriguez also wants the company to rehire Iberto Ramirez, a farm worker fired after he testified against Gallo for illegally trying to decertify the union in March 2003.
A male City of Montreal food inspector has been told to stop wearing a dress to work. Patrick Leland began wearing the dress to work to draw attention to what he says is discrimination against male employees. His union's collective bargaining agreement says that women can take retirement after 25 years of service, but men only after 30. Leland, a single father, wants to take early retirement so he can spend more time with his children. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card companies are squeezing consumers now more than ever. Charges for cash advances, late payments, and balance transfers are all on the rise. Last year, the entire credit card industry banked $43 billion from various fee charges, accounting for 35% of industry revenue, nearly double from just 6 years ago. The best way to avoid credit card fee traps is to always read the fine print of your bill and make sure to pay off balances on time.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
So here's this summary from this conservative publication, the New York Press, Volume 17, Issue 31. For an American conservative, better one lost election than the continued empowerment of cynical men who abuse conservatism through an exercise of power unrestrained by principle through the compromise of conservative beliefs. George W. Bush claims to be a conservative, but based upon the unwholesome intrusion into domestic life and personal liberty of his administration and the local governments who imitate it, George W. Bush is no conservative, no friend of limited constitutional government, and no friend of freedom. The Republic would be better served by his defeat in November. Conservatives saying this now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you have thoughts on this, you'd like to share with us. Philip in Tampa Bay, Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip, what's up?
Hi. You know, historically, the Zogby poll has traditionally been the most accurate. And yet, nobody is quoting Zogby poll, least of all the right-wing talk show hosts or Fox News. But they have historically been the most accurate. And the news release on 3 August says, quote, and you all can go to Zogby.com to read this. It says, Senator Kerry retains a lead through his convention. It says, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry remains solidly. Can you underline that word for me?
Solidly!
In the lead after a week in which his party and candidacy grabbed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And here we are. It says 3 August, and he says, Mr. Kerry picked up ground in Florida while Mr. Bush made up ground in West Virginia, Tennessee, and Ohio. And it says, according to him, in terms of the electoral votes, Bush 215 and Kerry 291.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, it says Kerry continues a strong season on the campaign trail, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you know, this is all positive for Kerry, and it's not on New York Times. It's not on ABC, NBC, CBS, Meet the Press, any of that, least of all, of course, Fox News. I think the Fox opinion dynamic says Bush's approval rating at 88%, I think, doesn't he?
But, you know, one of the things that
I'm going to suggest that you have Mr. Zogby, John Zogby, as a guest.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
He will do it.
Yeah, and Philip, one of the things that a lot of people are suggesting is that the reason why, I'm not yet ready to embrace this conspiracy theory, but it's increasingly starting to sound appealing. The reason why Zogby polls, which show Kerry way ahead, are not being reported, whereas some of the other polls that show it neck and neck are being reported, is because the fix is in. It has to do with electronic voting machines, and they wanted to make it look like,
yeah,
really was a tight race, and he sure enough did win. We'll see. We'll see. I'm not ready to go right off that bridge yet, but the fact that the Zogby poll is being so widely ignored is scary. Philip, thanks for the call.
Well, would you contact him via his website? He has Dear John to click on.
I'll do it.
And you can send him an email and invite him to be on the show. I'm sure he'd do it because he's being ignored.
Yeah, I'll do it. It would be interesting. It would be very interesting to talk to him. Thanks for the suggestion, Philip. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, our correspondent in Washington, D.C., is on the line. Hey, Victoria, how are you today?
Hey, good, thank you.
Hi, is Washington, D.C. still locked down like it was yesterday?
Oh, yes, it's probably more locked down.
Oh, my.
Possible, because now they want to close, or they may even have already closed. I didn't even go and find out. The street next to the Federal Reserve We already closed or at least blocked off part of the street next to the Treasury, which is also next to the White House. So, yes, it's getting more and more locked out, down. And Chief of Police Ramsey was on the radio this morning, and he was pretty blunt about it, saying, because he wasn't told until an hour and a half before it happened. Mm-hmm. So they already knew. They didn't consult him.
Yeah.
And it's his former deputy who did it. So his former deputy is now Chief of Capitol Police. He said, I don't like surprises. I don't need surprises. You know, I'm chief of the capital city of the country. I don't need this.
Yeah.
And he's ticked off. The citizens are getting increasingly ticked off because everyone recognizes it's not sustainable.
Yeah, see,
live like this.
Forgive me for sounding like a conspiracy nut, Victoria, but I really think that what they're doing is they're testing the limits of what they can do in New York during the Republican convention.
Well, they may be.
I think this is let's figure out, you know, how far we can push this thing, what people will take, and also the logistics of what works. You know, how do you do the police barricades? How do you reroute traffic? You know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And get people ready for it. Get them used to it. Let's hope I'm wrong. Anyhow, what are the biggest stories coming out of Washington, D.C. today?
Well, there's certainly that. I mean, that is a big story. We also have, of course, a fair amount of reaction to the possible terrorist arrests in Albany at that mosque.
Mm-hmm.
There's concern about that for a number of reasons, including that if the story is true, that this was an undercover operation for the last year, that these two guys were trying to buy a shoulder-launched missile or sell a shoulder-launched missile, that's particularly worrying because we know that Al-Qaeda wants to use these to shoot down planes at airports as planes take off. They've already tried to do it in Africa, and there has been some success in other places. So if they're planning something like that, that's fairly easy to do. Also, if they're planning to do something, say, in Washington, D.C., even with all this security, you can get a shoulder-launched missile, stand in a park beyond the barricades and launch it.
Yeah, and these are not things that are obscure or hard to get in the United States or around the world. I mean, there's just they're everywhere.
Right.
I mean, you don't find it at your average gun show, but I mean, there have to be hundreds of thousands of them, if not millions of them, that have been manufactured in the last 20 years. Both by our government and others.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other story is, and it's interesting how much credibility this story is being given, even though there is no credibility. It's on the Drudge Report, which means nothing, which is this new series of ads which are going to attack Kerry. Along with this book coming out by John O'Neill, a former Nixon operative, which is going to be, attacking Kerry's patriotism, basically, I think, calling him a coward, a liar, and a traitor.
Yeah.
What they seem to be doing.
Did you hear what John McCain said about that this morning?
Yes.
I mean,
I haven't seen in print what he said because I've been driving around, but I'm glad he said it, and I'm not surprised.
Oh, he just, you know, these are dishonorable. He really took them to task for those ads. And
I would like to have heard the president say that.
Yeah, well, that's what John McCain said. He said, I hope George Bush will disavow these ads, and the White House had no comment.
Well, they're going to have to do something.
Yeah.
Because it's going to start to look bad for them, even though I'm pretty sure Karl Rove endorsed them. Privately, I mean, something doesn't go on the air without him approving it. Bush is going to have to distance himself from it now.
Yeah.
Now that John McCain said this.
Well, it'll be one of those, please don't throw me in that briar patch, you know.
Oh, right.
I don't like those ads at all. But, of course, those people have freedom of speech. They
right.
can say anything they want.
They like. It's nothing to do with us.
Yeah. 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 Oh, well.
And those are the main stories.
Those are the main stories. Okay. Well, that's a good beginning. Victoria, thanks for checking in with us.
Thank you. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Great. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Our reporter, Victoria Jones, in Washington, D.C., with the Talk Radio News Service. William Brick. He quotes Theodore Roosevelt. He opens this thing by quoting Theodore Roosevelt. And here we get into the worldview of the conservatives. This is fascinating. He starts out with this quote from Roosevelt, which I've used before as our quote for the day. In fact, we'll make it today's quote for the day. To announce that there should be no criticism of the president or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American people. And then he goes on to say, with that in mind, I say George W. Bush is no conservative. And his unprincipled abandonment of conservatism under the pressure of events is no statesmanship. The Republic would be well served by his defeat this November. And then he makes the point. And this is where the great divide is. This is where the divide existed between Hamilton and Jefferson
in the 1780s and where it still stands today between, for example, the progressive Democrats, liberals, and conservative Republicans, or conservative Democrats for that matter, progressive Republicans. He says, he's quoting Churchill. He wrote of Lord Birkenhead, "Settled in somewhat somber conclusions upon questions about which many people are content to remain in placid suspense, that political and economic liberty are indivisible." So this is one of the core tenets of conservatism, that to have political freedom, there must be absolute economic freedom. It sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds, you know, it's just as a pitch. You should be absolutely free to do whatever you want with your money. After all, it's your money. And government should have no right in telling you what to do with it. Sounds reasonable. The problem is that when Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, when Rousseau talked about, you know, what a liberal nation would be like, when John Locke, in his second treatise on government, wrote about actually life, liberty, and the ownership of property, even, there was a larger picture, and that was that on the one hand, we don't want to have absolute control of an economy by a government. That was the Soviet idea, and it didn't work. It doesn't work. It has never worked. Totally controlled and managed economies. Doesn't work. It might work, you know, if you've got 150 people. It might work in a small community. It works for the kibbutz in Israel, but it doesn't, you know, it works for tribal people, but it doesn't work in a nation state. So on the one hand, you don't want to have the government controlling every aspect of the economy, owning the means of production and owning the means of distribution, every business owned by the government. You don't want that. On the other hand, if there is no force, and I use that word very advisedly, if there is no force that can balance the force, the power of great wealth, then you end up with a dictatorship of the rich. In past history, they have been called kings or feudal lords. And you end up with a society that has the shape of a pyramid, with a few very powerful people because they control economic power at the top, and a whole large bunch of people at the very bottom who are desperate and poor, and just a few people in the middle. Whereas the ideal shape of a democracy is where you've got, you know, there'll be a few people at the top, you can't avoid that, a few people at the bottom, the very poor, it seems like it's an intractable problem. But the majority of the people actually are in the middle. It's more shaped like a diamond standing on a point, rather than a pyramid. And that diamond shape comes about because you create that countervailing force in two ways. One, government defines the rules of the game by which business can be played. And yes, that is government interference in economic liberty. In other words, absolute economic liberty is not a good thing, because ultimately what it will lead to is dictatorship by those who have the most economic power. Economic power is every bit as much a power as political power. And in fact, you can have a situation where economic power becomes greater than political power. And then you shift from a form of governance of, by, and for the people into a form of governance of, by, and for the corporations. What Mussolini defined as fascism. So one way that you constrain that the unlimited growth of economic power is by having laws like the Sherman Antitrust Act that say that when companies get so big that they prevent competition, when you see the symptoms of the destruction of competition, then something's wrong and the government needs to step in and stop that from happening. When every city in America begins to look like every other city in America, something's wrong. Something's broken. Because small business people can't compete. They cannot go into the marketplace and succeed. And it's not because they're not good, and it's not because they're not smart, and it's not because they're not aggressive, and it's not because they're not willing to be competitive. It's because great economic power has suppressed them. So, number one, you have things like the Sherman Act, which Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing, which began the disintegration of the American middle class and the wiping out of the American entrepreneurial class. And number two, if you are going to allow capital to aggregate, to form its own, you know, unions in things like corporations that own other corporations, something that Jefferson argued should be illegal, and in fact was illegal in every state in the Union in the 1780s and 1790s and 1800s, all the way up to the Civil War when Lincoln started suspending those laws so that the corporations could get large enough to supply him with war material. And then the 1880s, when states actually started taking apart those laws, that if you're going to allow corporations to acquire other corporations, if you're going to allow them to form unions, mergers, then you have to have, then workers, the other half of the equation, as Lincoln said, labor is superior to capital because it precedes capital. In other words, you don't have money until somebody makes something. Then labor must have the ability to organize as well, which is called unions. So this is the cleavage. This is the split between the conservative worldview that says economic power should be absolutely unrestrained and political power should be restrained, and the liberal worldview which says let's restrain both. Let's restrain both to have a rational society. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy?
In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Mega media giant Clear Channel Communications refused to allow an anti-war group to buy space on a billboard in Times Square during the Republican National Convention through Election Day. But public pressure forced Clear Channel to finally accept an ad showing a giant peace dove and a ticker displaying the cost of the war in Iraq in dollars. The 150-foot-long sign will be displayed at Broadway and 42nd Street. WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
Project Billboard, an anti-war group based in California and interested in encouraging public debate, filed a lawsuit against Clear Channel Communications alleging breach of contract. What is at stake is a billboard advertisement that Project Billboard contracted to run with Clear Channel. The advertisement featured a red, white, blue character of a bomb with the caption, "Democracy is better taught by example, not by war." Clear Channel rejected the first advertisement, saying they were not going to run bomb copy in New York City. Project Billboard then replaced the bomb image with a red and white blue dove, accompanied by the same words, but this was also rejected. They claimed that Clear Channel had suggested that the billboard be an image of a little girl waving a flag. Clear Channel Communications is one of the nation's largest media companies with close ties to National Republicans. I asked Deborah Rappaport, founder of the Project Billboard, whether she thought the debate had begun, as Clear Channel Communications' rejection of the billboard had started a flurry of debate in television and newspaper stories.
This was never our intent to get into any sort of a fight like this. We're not unhappy that our message is getting out, but we would be many, many, many times happier if it were getting out in the mode that we had chosen.
We put a call into Clear Channel Communications for comment, but it by news broadcast had no response. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. The Bush administration has transformed, according to the Congressional Budget Office, a 10-year projected surplus of $5.6 trillion into a deficit of $4.4 trillion. Writes William Brick in the news and column section of the New York Press, conservative publication. A turnaround of $10 trillion in roughly 32 months. He goes on to say the Bush administration can't even pretend to keep an arm's length from Halliburton, the master of the no-bid government contract. Sugar, grain, cotton, oil, gas, and coal. These industries enjoy increased subsidies and targeted tax breaks, not enjoyed by less connected industries. He points out that the Cato Institute called the administration's energy plan three parts corporate welfare and one part cynical politics. A smorgasbord of handouts and subsidies for virtually every energy lobby in Washington that does little but transfer wealth from taxpayers to well-connected energy lobbies. You see, by the way, yesterday where Dick Cheney was attacking, I thought this was such a hoot. Dick Cheney, "We haven't been able to get the energy bill through Congress because we're two votes short. And you know who voted against it? Edwards and Kerry." And I wanted to stand up and cheer. And this is, you know, Cheney's talking points. His energy bill that he put together, sitting in a secret room, so secret that he was willing to take it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, "No, sorry, you can't keep it secret, but you don't have to release it until after the elections." Who was in that meeting, and what was said? that meeting where they were dividing up the country of Iraq. Anyhow, none of this is conservative, writes Brick, although it is in keeping with the Bush family's history. Kevin Phillips, he talks about his book American Dynasty, the Bush family's rise to wealth and power through crony capitalism, the use of contracts obtained in public service for private profit. Phillips argues the Bushes don't disfavor big government as such, merely that part of it that regulates business, maintains the environment, or aids the needy. This is a conservative publication saying this. Subsidizing oil well drilling through tax breaks, which made George H.W. Bush's fortune, or bailing out financial institutions such as Neil Bush's bankrupt Silverado savings and loan, is a good thing. And they're just, you know, they're looking at this going, this is not conservatism. This is, and they're absolutely right. George Bush is no more a conservative than I'm a Martian. Okay. Some people might wonder, but no, seriously, he, in the classic sense of the word, or you can say the word conservative has been reinvented, and now it means corporatist, those who are in favor of rule by corporations rather than rule by we the people through our elected representatives. And that's just the bottom line, folks. That's just the bottom line. And one of the most important reasons why we got to throw him out of office. In November, of course.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There is sufficient evidence that Quebecor World has been practicing unfair labor practices. That was the ruling by two regional directors of the National Labor Relations Board in response to complaints filed at the company's plants in Corinth, Mississippi, and Versailles, Kentucky. The charges claim the Canadian-based company has intimidated, coerced, and discriminated and retaliated against employees who want to form a union. Workers at those two plants and a third plant in Olive Branch, Mississippi, plan to appeal other charges that were dismissed. In addition, there are 31 charges in the pipeline filed by workers at plants in Tennessee and Nevada. Black workers at the Olive Branch plant have also charged the company with racial discrimination.
Sour grape for farm workers seeking a new labor contract at the world's largest wine producer. On Tuesday, the United Farm Workers of America presented representatives of Gallo Wine Ranch in Sonoma County, California, with a petition signed by 25,000 union supporters, asking Gallo to sign a fair labor agreement with 350 UFW employees who've been working without a contract since November 1st of last year. At issue is health care coverage and benefits for independently contracted employees. Gallo gives workers it employs directly health care insurance and benefits, but refuses to offer sick days, vacation pay, or medical benefits to labor contractor workers, which make up about 75% of Gallo's workforce. Farm workers also want a wage increase, Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
Right now, the general labor rate for those workers is only $7.08 an hour. This is one of the most expensive areas to live here in the state of California, so they just can't survive on that wage.
Rodriguez also wants the company to rehire Evierto Ramirez, a farm worker fired after he testified against Gallo for illegally trying to decertify the union in March 2003.
A male City of Montreal food inspector has been told to stop wearing a dress to work. Patrick Leland began wearing the dress to work to draw attention to what he says is discrimination against male employees. His union's collective bargaining agreement says that women can take retirement after 25 years of service, but men only after 30. Leland, a single father, wants to take early retirement so he can spend more time with his children. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card companies are squeezing consumers now more than ever. Charges for cash advances, late payments, and balance transfers are all on the rise. Last year, the entire credit card industry banked $43 billion from various fee charges, accounting for 35% of industry revenue, nearly double from just 6 years ago. The best way to avoid credit card fee traps is to always read the fine print of your bill and make sure to pay off balances on time.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Very soon now, you'll be hearing and reading red, white, and blue editorials about your responsibility to go vote this fall. Every vote counts, they'll cry. Unless, of course, it doesn't. Many of our votes this year will be cast and tallied on corporate-controlled electronic voting machines that keep no trackable record of our ballots. These computers can easily malfunction and be manipulated, meaning they can be used to cheat and steal elections. Here's a question. Shouldn't your vote for president or Congress or whatever be at least as secure as a 25-cent bet you might place in a Las Vegas slot machine? Of course. Yet a New York Times investigation finds that gamblers are more protected than voters. For example, the software to all gambling machines is on file with the state, and the machines are constantly spot-checked by public officials. But corporate purveyors of electronic voting machines consider their software a trade secret, off limits to public inspection. Also, if a company wants to sell a gambling device, it must submit to a criminal background check and register its employees. To sell computerized voting devices, however, a corporation only has to convince a local election official to buy its stuff. No checks required. Then there's the conflict of interest issue. The technical labs that certify gambling devices must be independent of the makers of those machines. For voting machines, however, the certifying labs are chosen and paid for by the manufacturers. And what if you think you've been cheated? With a slot machine, you have a right to an immediate inspection, and investigators are on call at all hours, empowered to open the machines and find the flaw or fraud. But with electronic voting machines, there are no inspectors on call, and any subsequent inspection is not allowed to open the machines. This is Jim Hightower saying, why should gamblers be more protected than voters? To fight this scam, go to www.verifiedvoting.org. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR, but they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE, or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and license.
Thank you.
a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. www.tomhartman.com if you want to drop into our chat room. Already full, well-populated, interesting discussion. Is bad bad? Would you vote anybody but Bush? Would you have voted for anybody but Saddam? Would you have voted for anybody but Stalin? Interesting question. Speaking of voting, www.votersunite.org, VOTERSUNITE.org, has a great take action section. They point out that black box voting, www.blackboxvoting.org, is Bev Harris's site, is organizing an election watch crew. They're going to be checking out voting machines. VerifiedVoting.org is doing a tech watch program. That's VerifiedVoting.org. They're going to be looking into the electronic voting machines. There's this whole grassroots movement happening all across the United States of citizen patriots getting involved in making sure that the voting machines are not rigged and the election is not stolen and that people are actually allowed to vote and that they're not illegally purged. You know what's really strange about all this? Down in Florida, the Republican Party sent out an email to its members saying, the electronic voting machines may be unreliable, so use absentee ballots. At the same time that Jeb Bush is saying, we don't need a paper trail on the electronic voting machines. They're perfectly fine. There's no problem with the fact that there's no way to prove how somebody voted. Very strange. In New Mexico, a special request here from the folks at Voters Unite. We have a request from New Mexico, and we need all of you to participate. Excuse me. Help stop Bernalillo? Must be Bernalillo County. That's Albuquerque, from buying more Sequoia AVC Edge electronic voting machines. Remember Bernalillo County? 48,000 people voted on the touchscreens in November 2002. Only 36,000 of their votes were counted. The 25% error went unnoticed for 10 days until an attorney noticed it. Sequoia technicians claim they were able to reconstruct the data and determine the actual vote counts. And they have a link to the whole story there. New Mexico activists tell us that Bernalillo County is poised to make a very large purchase shortly, and the county's decision is likely to set the standard for the state. VotersUnite.org says, call and object! They say, call 505-768-4085, then press 1 when the message starts. Ask for County Clerk Mary Herrera or her assistant. Tell them you're calling to request that they do not purchase any more of these unreliable voting systems for Bernalillo County. Even if you live outside New Mexico, call and let them know where you're calling from. You're a stakeholder in New Mexico elections. You have a right to be heard. This from VotersUnite.org. That phone number, pardon my, 505-768-4085 for Mary Herrera or her assistant. SeptemberSurprise.com. Jim Turr, Blue Canyon Productions, has this great website that he has put up where he's running a contest of sorts. You can register what you think the Bush administration is going to do to try and steal the election. Not so much steal the election. Well, yeah, okay, steal the election. Or, you know, what's going to be the October surprise? I mean, the last, you know, the October surprise of long ago and far away, of course, was George H.W. Bush cutting a deal with the Iranian government to hold on to the hostages that were taken during the last months of Carter's administration in Iran until after the election. This caused Carter to lose the election. He had been 6-7 points ahead of Reagan, but the hostage taking just, you know, really eroded his support. It made him look weak and impotent and unable to do anything, and on and on. And you know, Reagan used it well as a political issue. And then, of course, the hostages were released as Reagan was being sworn in. And then when there were no hostages at all, the Reagan administration, you know, Poindexter North, that whole bunch, was selling missiles to Iran. And oddly, during the Iran-Contra hearings, they said that they had to sell the missiles to get hostages freed. Well, there were no hostages at that time. There were hostages before the election. And then there were hostages in Lebanon about 2 years later. But during the time that the Reagan administration was selling those missiles to Iran, there were no hostages. Why did they do it? Well, it was a payoff, of course, obviously. But anyhow, that's the original October surprise. And we're working on a contest here. Mike Toth, who does our archives, has informed me that he has acquired a copy of the original October Surprise book by Barbara Honegger, which is a real collector's item and a brilliant book. She was a White House insider. She worked in the White House, and she just lays the whole thing out. And that we are going to use as as a giveaway for somebody who wins the contest. Now, I haven't put together a contest yet. Well, maybe we can coordinate this with Jim Turr. I don't know. We'll see. But septembersurprise.com is Jim's site. This is sort of an evolving process, but I think it's just fascinating. What are they going to do to register your prediction on the pre-election tricks Bush and company are most likely to pull out of the hat to rally support for the Bush administration? Here are a couple of the submissions. Here are some of the things that you can see them on the website. A revelation of another so-called Kerry affair. Remember that poor woman who was out of the country and I think it was a drudge who put that thing. Somebody manufactured this just out of thin air. This woman who had apparently at one point been an intern for John Kerry. You know, senators always have interns, congressmen and women, presidents. I mean, it's a big deal to be an intern. It's like, you know, a great thing for your resume. And so here's this poor woman. She's married. She's off in Europe. And some right-winger trots out this thing that Kerry had an affair with her. It's well documented that it had not happened. And, in fact, has been retracted as an accusation. But anyhow, so suggestion number one, they'll trot out another one of those, and it'll be too late, too close to the election to refute. Number two, announcing the capture or death of bin Laden. I would put money on that. Number three, in fact, I would put money on that for the Republican convention. Number three, announcing plans for the complete withdrawal of all troops from Iraq. You know, the other side of that would be announcing the secret plan. Remember Nixon's secret plan to get us out of Vietnam? Actually, it was, you know, I think it was Kissinger who said that he had the secret plan. But the secret plan for peace that was pretty much the major thing that Nixon used to get himself reelected. Number four, another suggestion, the elevation of the terror alert. By the way, you're welcome to call and suggest what you think may be. Get it on the record here, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Number five, another one from the septembersurprise.com website, announcing the breakup of a huge terrorist cell planning to disrupt the November elections. See, this is a real win-win for the Bush administration. I saw one of these Republican consultants on TV a couple nights ago. He was going, you know, the Kerry guys, the Democrats are hoping that there'll be an attack so that they can say, we told you so, you weren't keeping the country safe. This is called immunization. You know, of course the Democrats are not hoping for an attack. They are not, you know, I don't think the Republicans are either, frankly. I really don't. Maybe, okay, I wouldn't put it past Karl Rove. But by and large, most Democrats and most Republicans are not sociopaths. Yeah, they have a worldview that they believe in. They think it's the right way the country should be run, the correct way the country should be run. But they're not. They wouldn't want people to die to satisfy their worldview. You know, outside of, you know, Wolfowitz and Feith and Rumsfeld and Bush and Cheney. I mean, you know, it's... Yes, we can lie our way into a war and it'll give us great political benefit. See, I'm still
still very fried about the whole. I mean, this was the October surprise in 2002. Was the, you know, authorizing the president to go to the UN, and if all else, and you know, if the UN says yes, then going into Iraq. Or even if the UN doesn't say yes, but the president determines and is willing to swear to Congress that Iraq, A, has a link to al-Qaeda and 9/11, and B, that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction and is intending to use them against the United States. If they can demonstrate those two things, if Bush can demonstrate those two things, then he can attack them, right? And Bush actually wrote back saying, yep, we have the proof of both. He lied to the United States Congress. This is what John Dean, in his book Worse Than Watergate, he says, that, you know, this is an impeachable offense, lying to Congress. And then sending nearly 1,000 young American men and women to their death over that lie. Anyhow, that's announcing the breakup of a huge terrorist cell planning to disrupt November elections. And number six, Cheney's withdrawal from the ticket. And Jim notes in his note to me, you know, I know that you've been predicting this for over a year. Yeah, I have, that Cheney will be replaced by Giuliani or possibly, maybe, John McCain. But increasingly, I think John McCain's disgust with George Bush is becoming obvious. On the other hand, if John McCain became vice president, then he could run, and they won, then he could run for president in 4 years, which is something that he's always wanted his whole entire life. And so maybe he would just hold his nose. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Robert in Santa Fe's on. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to ask some things about, you know, all the people and lawyers and voter monitors. They're going to be in place, you know, for the election, and including Michael Moore in Florida with his cameras and everything.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is that how, you know, that may have an effect on what they do physically at the poll, but how is that going to have any kind of effect one way or the other on what happens inside of the computerized voting machine?
Well, that's the problem. The only way to spot that, in my opinion, is to do exit polling. Good, clean, solid, well done, thorough, exhaustive, you know, accurate exit polling. And I haven't heard anybody proposing that they're going to be doing that. I sure hope the Democratic Party gets it together to do that, or somebody does. Because, you know, we do need to clean these things up. Robert, thanks for the you know, a good point that you make and an excellent question. And this is one we need to be looking at. Drop into these websites and make your votersunite.org, for example, and all the blogs out there. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Freedom, a marvelous idea. The freedom to vote and know that your vote is actually being counted. One of the folks in our chat room, I mentioned exit polls. They said, well, wait a minute, have we always been doing exit polls? No, what happened was the polling companies, some of the polling companies used to do exit polls. And in the 96 and 98 elections, they sort of got out of the business. The results started going flaky in 96 and 98. And so a consortium was formed that was funded in part by the Associated Press, NBC, CNN, CBS, ABC, the New York Times, I believe the Washington Post. There was 6 or 7 press members to this consortium. And the consortium funded a company, the name of which is escaping me at the moment. You can easily find this on the web, that would do exit polling for the 2000 election. And the for the 98 election and the 2000 election. And the 98 election results from the exit polls were so different from what the electronic voting machines were showing that they were concerned. And then in 2000, they never actually released the exit polls. They never released the exit polls. Seriously. They did exit polling. And they never told us what the results were, and the company went out of business. And the word is that the exit poll differences were substantial in those areas where there were electronic voting machines. And the company didn't release the results, some people say, because it would have called into question the integrity of the American voting system, a.k.a. electronic voting machines. And others suggest they didn't release the results because they assumed that the voting machines had to be right, and therefore their exit polls were wrong, and they were embarrassed by it. But in any case, the company is gone. It's toast. It's history, and there's nobody, to the best of my knowledge, doing exit polling. Maybe somebody can correct me on that, but as far as I know, it ain't happening. And it should. It should be. This is how we guarantee that elections are accurate and not rigged in third world countries. The UN goes in, does exit polling. The Carter Foundation or whatever Jimmy Carter's thing is down there in Atlanta, Carter Center. They, you know, exit polls have been used for a long, long time as a way of guaranteeing the integrity of an election. I agree with those members of Congress who signed a letter to Kofi Annan saying, please bring in the UN. We need election monitors in the United States because you got Jeb Bush and other banana Republicans trying to steal elections. Robert in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just wanted to tell you I am a new listener. I got an email that had an article from Common Dreams, and from there I found you.
Oh, great.
And I'm actually originally from Lansing, Michigan. I see that's where you started DJing.
Yeah, it's where I grew up.
Yeah, and I like your show a lot, and I was been listening the last couple of weeks, and you said something about if we raised our CAFE standards just 3 miles, I don't know if you said we could cut our dependence from all Middle East oil or Saudi Arabian.
It's a two-part. This is Howard Dean was saying this on the campaign trail, just, you know, every place he went, and it's well documented. There's a gotcha in there. If we raised our CAFE standards by 3 miles per gallon and we eliminated the SUV exemption. Now, eliminating the SUV exemption means that SUVs have to get fleet standard mileage, right? So all of a sudden, these cars that get 7 miles to the gallon are going to have to get, 24 miles to the gallon is the fleet standard now, I believe it is. It's in the 20s, anyhow. And there are so many SUVs on the market. See, about a quarter of the total oil that we import is from the Middle East, and about half of our imported oil is used by automobiles. So if we made those two changes, the automobiles would consume enough less fuel that we would no longer need to import oil from the Middle East.
Yeah. And where are you, besides Howard Dean, where could I get like that documentation?
Well, let me poke around the web. You know, it's been you know, since the primaries that I've seen it. It's in dozens of news stories here, there, and the other thing. As I said, the big gotcha is eliminating the SUV exemption because there's so many SUVs on the road and they're sucking up so much gasoline. Yeah, you do that, plus you raise the CAFE standards 3 miles per gallon, you're going to have a huge difference in the amount of oil being consumed. I'll track it down and report on it tomorrow. How's that?
Okay, great.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks for calling. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There is sufficient evidence that Quebecor World has been practicing unfair labor practices. That was the ruling by two regional directors of the National Labor Relations Board in response to complaints filed at the company's plants in Corinth, Mississippi, and Versailles, Kentucky. The charges claim the Canadian-based company has intimidated, coerced, and discriminated and retaliated against employees who want to form a union. Workers at those two plants and a third plant in Olive Branch, Mississippi, plan to appeal other charges that were dismissed. In addition, there are 31 charges in the pipeline filed by workers at plants in Tennessee and Nevada. Black workers at the Olive Branch plant have also charged the company with racial discrimination.
Sour grape for farm workers seeking a new labor contract at the world's largest wine producer. On Tuesday, the United Farm Workers of America presented representatives of Gallo Wine Ranch in Sonoma County, California, with a petition signed by 25,000 union supporters, asking Gallo to sign a fair labor agreement with 350 UFW employees who've been working without a contract since November 1st of last year. At issue is health care healthcare coverage and benefits for independently contracted employees. Gallo gives workers it employs directly healthcare insurance and benefits, but refuses to offer sick days, vacation pay, or medical benefits to labor contractor workers, which make up about 75% of Gallo's workforce. Farm workers also want a wage increase, Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
Right now, the general labor rate for those workers is only $7.08 an hour. This is one of the most expensive areas to live here in the state of California, so they just can't survive on that wage.
Rodriguez also wants the company to rehire Iberto Ramirez, a farm worker fired after he testified against Gallo for illegally trying to decertify the union in March 2003.
A male City of Montreal food inspector has been told to stop wearing a dress to work. Patrick Leland began wearing the dress to work to draw attention to what he says is discrimination against male employees. His union's collective bargaining agreement says that women can take retirement after 25 years of service, but men only after 30. Leland, a single father, wants to take early retirement so he can spend more time with his children. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card companies are squeezing consumers now more than ever. Charges for cash advances, late payments, and balance transfers are all on the rise. Last year, the entire credit card industry banked $43 billion from various fee charges, accounting for 35% of industry revenue, nearly double from just 6 years ago. The best way to avoid credit card fee traps is to always read the fine print of your bill and make sure to pay off balances on time.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
In the good old USA, I'm proud to say, we got brand new action, good old fashioned too.
Yeah, welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Let me just review this real quickly. My recollection, and we're going to get the actual nail them down statistics here. But about half the oil, just a little bit more than half the oil we use in the United States, we import. And about half of it we produce domestically. Of the oil that we import most of it from Canada, Mexico, and Venezuela. And about a quarter of the oil that we import comes from, and we import a lot of it from Africa now. But about a quarter of the oil that we import comes from the Middle East. So that's really like an eighth of the oil that we use, right? And so then you do the CAFE standards and get out the SUVs in it. And half of the oil that we use goes into cars in the United States. So an eighth of a half, you can do the math on that. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So just to shift gears a little bit, now we hear, of course, you've heard it, that John Kerry, a lieutenant in Vietnam that volunteered for Vietnam and volunteered for heavy combat duty, in a four-month period faked three Purple Hearts, the Bronze Star with a Valor Mark, and the Silver Star.
Yeah. And if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
You know, this isn't even politics. It's just a particularly lowbrow set of character assassinations, one after another, you know. And it's what your political party does when the issues are not on your side. It's wedge issue after wedge issue sandwiched between terror warnings.
Yeah.
I don't think it can work.
I absolutely agree with John McCain on this. John McCain came out and said, he says, I wish they hadn't done it. I don't know if they knew all the facts. He says, and then asked if the White House knew about it. He says, I hope not, but I don't know. But I think the Bush campaign should specifically condemn the ad. He says, I can't believe the president would pull such a cheap stunt. He goes on to say, I deplore this kind of politics. I think the ad is dishonest and dishonorable. As it is, none of these individuals served on the boat Kerry commanded. Many of his crew have testified to his courage under fire. I think John Kerry served honorably in Vietnam. That's John McCain.
Yeah.
The Republican who wanted to be president, you know, John McCain, who is outspokenly, and actually the next sentence after that, I also think George Bush served honorably in the Texas Air National Guard during the Vietnam War. So, I mean, you know, he's a good Republican.
Well, he's a good politician.
Yeah, well, some would argue with that. I think that John McCain is probably more statesman than politician.
Well, and if he says something like that again, we might start hearing out of the right wing how John McCain faked his injuries.
Well, that's what they were doing to him in South Carolina. I mean, the Bush administration came after him. And, in fact, he points out that this is the same thing that the Bush administration did to him in South Carolina in the 2000 election. In fact, it was the same kind of deal that was pulled on me, McCain said in an interview with the Associated Press, referring to his bitter Republican primary fight with President Bush.
Well, if you have people like Saxby Chambliss on your side and you let that sort of thing get by, this is going to happen again and again until someone calls him on it.
Yeah. This is the strategy that Saxby Chambliss, running against Max Cleland, the Vietnam War veteran who left both legs and an arm on the battlefield in Vietnam. Saxby Chambliss ran TV ads morphing Max Cleland's face into that of Saddam Hussein, or Osama bin Laden, rather. And calling him unpatriotic, an obscenity.
This has gotten as low as I've ever seen it.
Yeah, well, it's going to get lower. It's going to get lower, Chris. The farther down George Bush goes in the polls, the more you're going to see the flailing around, the more terror alerts you're going to see, the more just plain old flat out lies. This guy, George W. Bush, has demonstrated in previous political campaigns that he is perfectly willing to lie and assassinate the character of his opponent. I mean, when he was running against John McCain in South Carolina, they did push polling. They called tens of thousands of registered Republicans in South Carolina a week before the primary that John McCain had won in New Hampshire, and it looked like he had the presidential nomination sewn up in 2000. And he was going into South Carolina, and he was way ahead in the polls. And Karl Rove hires one of these giant polling firms that can call, 1,000 people at a time. And they called tens of thousands of registered Republicans in South Carolina and said, we're doing a survey. If you knew that John McCain had a child out of wedlock with a black woman, how would that affect your vote?
Yeah.
And if you and because McCain has an adopted daughter, if it turned out that if you knew that John McCain's wife had been treated in a psychiatric facility, how would that change your vote? If you knew that John McCain had had a mental breakdown as a result of 5 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam and was on psychiatric medication and under psychiatric care, how would that affect your vote? None of these things, of course, were true.
Of course.
At all.
And
their defense, the Bush campaign's defense was, well, we never said those things were true. We were just asking the question.
Yeah.
It's going to happen again. And this is the beginning of it.
Well,
this is the
best reason probably for voting Bush out of office is because I've been vaguely nauseated for 4 years now.
Yeah, vaguely. Vaguely. Yeah.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you got a good stomach, Chris. Thanks a lot for the call. 21 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. John in Bern. Say it for me, John.
Bernalillo,
there you go.
Okay,
hey, what's up?
We went through hell in 2000 because we got problems make Cook County back in the old daily days look simple for voting.
This is with voting machines there?
Well, it's just with vote counting and, you name a problem and ballot box stuffing and every other bloody thing.
Hmm.
It's really bad. And so we've been looking in this at grassroots level. But there's an election that I'm reminded of that no one really seems to be paying attention to that we think is highly reminiscent here. And that's when Cory Aquino in the Philippines ran against Marcos.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting to look at what Marcos tried to do. And the thing that frightens me and all of my grassroots, we're pretty much all Greens, frightens me and my colleagues the most is it ended up in what basically came down to a civil war.
Yeah, I was there. I was in Manila. I was working with Father Ben Carrion, who at that time was writing a column for the Manila Times called Joke Only. It was like this political comedy column. And he had this whole program for the kids who lived literally in the garbage dumps of Manila. And I was there in Manila. And in fact, I was scheduled to fly out the day that Ferdy Marcos
you know, jumped down. And his, I got bumped off four, off all the flights out of Manila 4 days in a row, even though I had a confirmed reservation, because all of his crony, I had to fly, you know, I was flying to Hawaii to come back to the United States, and all of his cronies, they just, you know, I was on Philippine Airlines, and they had all just taken the seats, you know, that's it. They bribed their way onto the planes. And so, I, you know, and there was the guy, I'm forgetting his name. One of the guys in Aquino's campaign, who is like the number two or three guy, and there was a jeep that chased him into one of the slums of Manila, and two guys jumped out and machine gunned him to death. He was trying to hide in a public outhouse. And they got back in the jeep and drove off, and somebody took a picture of the jeep as it drove off, and the license plate belonged to the, you know, one of the guys in the Marcos regime. And again, I'm missing the names. I mean, this has been quite a few years.
Yeah, it was what, 1984, I think. Something.
Yeah, it was in the 80s. I don't remember the year. And that funeral procession went right in front of my hotel. I can't remember the name of the hotel now either. Boy, getting old is a terrible thing. But it was there must have been 100,000 people in the street. I mean, you know, looking out the window of the hotel and watching these people come down the street carrying this coffin. And it was, I mean, that was the turning point in the People Power campaign. That was about 2 or 3 days, I think, before all the Marcos guys got out of town. And it was just an amazing time in the Philippines. I frankly don't think that it's going to go that far here in the United States. I don't think that it would, frankly, because Cory Aquino was able to get tremendous media coverage. And even though the Marcos family owned so much of the media, and...
Well, is that because her husband was assassinated, you think?
It could be. He was beloved. I mean, you know, it's and she was in many ways sort of a national icon. And frankly, I'm not enough of a scholar on the Philippine press to know to what extent they, you know, they were controlled versus the American press. But I just have this sense that Americans are far less involved in their politics than the Filipinos were when I was there when that happened. Time will tell. We'll see. I would hope and pray that that is not what happens in the United States, because, like I said, I was there. It was a mess. It was a real mess, and the country is still suffering for it.
Yeah.
But good point, Chris. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. And let's see. Steve in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've been wanting to call you about this for a little bit, and I didn't know how I'd segue it into what you're talking about. But
that's okay. We all have ADD here. You can jump all over.
Yeah, but I like to keep on topic. A couple calls ago, you were on the topic of military service and what have you.
Yeah.
And my issue is with Arnold Schwarzenegger and his, you know, recent comment using the female gender to deride people and all that kind of garbage.
His girly men comment about the Democrats.
Yeah. And the thing that I want to talk about is there's this magazine. It's probably not that popular out in your side of the country, but out here it's called Cowboys and Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty popular magazine, and he's on the cover of it this month.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing this leather jacket decked out with all these patches
mm-hmm.
of military, you know, squadrons, you know, mm-hmm. like the U.S. Enterprise, 101 Airborne, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And he's all decked out in all this stuff. And as I may be wrong, but I do believe he's in the Chicken Hawk Hall of Shame, isn't he?
Well, he never served in the United States military. I mean, you know, he's an immigrant from Austria. And
yeah, but he was a citizen at the time of Vietnam, I do believe.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, anyway, he's decked out in all this stuff, and I myself don't know how to ride a motorcycle, and that's one of the main reasons I don't wear a Harley Davidson jacket.
Yeah.
You know, and
it is a little disingenuous. See, I think that Arnold, you know, being an actor, has this mindset that he, and this was certainly true of Reagan too, that he can just sort of say something or dress in a particular way and it just kind of makes it so.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not really a brave soldier, I just play one on TV.
Right, and everybody will understand that that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And they fall for this, and they actually believe that he's a real hero. And I just want people to, you know, to look at that cover and see what a creep he is for wearing this stuff that he did not serve on and has no business wearing.
You know, oddly, I suspect that if any politician who hadn't previously been an actor tried a stunt like that, they would be taken down for it. I mean, they would be just absolutely, it would be the end of their political career. But Schwarzenegger, because he was an actor, for some reason, is given more leeway in allowing him to act, as it were. It's a good point, Steve. Good point, and it's wrong. Thanks for the call. 1-866-88.
Okay, thank you.
1-866-889-8894. Ellen in Washington State. Where in Washington State are you, Ellen?
I'm in Port Ludlow.
Oh, great. And what's up?
Well, I am the founder and executive director of Voters Unite, and I was very happy to hear that you were talking about our site on your show today.
Oh, I gave you a huge plug.
I know. That was very cool. And the reason I'm calling is I when my friend told me that you had, I said, I hope that you were mentioning the letter that we sent out to the chief election officials of every state, because we feel very strongly about the information that we had in that letter, and we're hoping that they will distribute it to all of the local election officials in their state.
Well, I don't believe I did, so why don't you tell us about it? We have about 3 minutes here.
It's the information is available from... On the right bar, it says, of our site, it says New Info for Election Officials.
This is the website, votersunite.org.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the information is there. We are very concerned that the bugs that have been found in the ES&S iVotronic paperless electronic voting machines in Miami-Dade are not being publicized throughout the United States. We read in an article that ES&S said they would notify their customers, but we have talked to enough of their customers that didn't know anything about it that we are concerned that that's not happening, and there are important workarounds that they need to know about.
Yeah.
So that's one of the items in our letter.
ES&S being the company that Chuck Hagel used to be the president of, or the leader of, before he stepped down to run for United States Senate in the state that he had sold the machines to. Nebraska.
Yes, that's true.
Interesting story. But anyway,
yes.
And your next point?
Our second point of information is that we're concerned that a lot of these election officials aren't aware of the importance of the ballot programming, which basically is the election-specific programming that determines how touches on the screen or marks on a ballot are going to be recorded.
Right.
And an awful lot of the ballot programming is done by the vendors.
Mm-hmm. And this might have something to do with why in Florida, when so many people complained that when they pushed Jeb Bush's opponent's button on the screen, that the thing said, thank you for voting for Jeb Bush, basically.
That does sound like a ballot programming problem.
Yeah, they called it misaligned touch screens.
Unfortunately, with the paperless machines, you really can't very well confirm that there's a ballot programming problem because there's no paper to check it against.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, we're advocating very stringent testing mechanisms. Another thing that we think is extremely important is that both ES&S and Diebold have been late delivering paper ballots in recent elections, and we are delaying their absentee voting, and we're very concerned about that, and we think that local election officials should make a serious effort to find an alternative, find a backup plan in case these vendors get overwhelmed with ballot orders for November.
Okay, great. Ellen, we got to wrap it up here. We got to take a break.
Yes, thank you for this much time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the good work that you're doing at votersunite.org, and we'll keep pointing people to you.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
I'm Sarah Turner of the Workers' Independent News Service bringing you today's feature story. A New York police officer went on trial this week for disobeying orders by refusing to arrest a homeless man who was asleep in a parking garage. WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
The police officer, Eduardo De La Cruz, a 10-year New York Police Department veteran with an unblemished record, may lose his job. The departmental trial began Wednesday for an incident that happened 2 years ago. Anthony Miranda, executive chair of the National Latino Officers Association, has been attending the trial.
They never gave Officer De La Cruz a direct order. And the police department's patrol guide is very specific wording when it's courts for disobeying an order where you're instructed as a supervisor to say, "Officer, I am now ordering you to take this arrest." And the sergeant on the stand today admitted he never used those words.
Miranda says that he thinks it's a kangaroo court and thinks De La Cruz is being targeted because he's Latino. What is of note is the trial has been conducted in the same year that the New York Police Department settled a $27 million lawsuit filed by 22 Latino and black officers who argued they were more severely punished in discipline actions than white officers. We contacted the NYPD Deputy Commissioner of Public Information for comment and was told we could quote the following. In a paramilitary organization, refusing to obey a lawful order from a supervisor is a serious offense, and it's treated accordingly. And treated accordingly for De La Cruz could be losing his job, despite no orders being given. The civil rights activist Norman Siegel is De La Cruz's lawyer, and I asked him why he thought De La Cruz was on trial for the same incident.
There really shouldn't be a case. They've already punished him more than adequately.
Officer De La Cruz is expected to take the stand in his defense on Tuesday. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting from New York.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm back. Welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi. I was reading on the Internet that Bloomberg report says that Bush, during the recess of Congress, is going to be appointing to power a former Chevron Texaco representative to the FTC, and the reason there's concern about that is because this particular lady, they're afraid is going to be pro-oil.
Just a little bit.
For the big mergers.
Yeah, yeah. It's this is, you know, he's been doing these recess appointments. This is a provision in the Constitution that, first of all, basically says that you can only make a recess appointment if the opening becomes available during the recess, which it hasn't. So, number one, I don't think he's legal. But number two, he's been doing this. And it was put in there really for emergencies, you know, because in the beginning, Congress was a part-time job. You know, they showed up for a few months out of the year. And then, you know, if there was an emergency and it went unfilled, then the president could fill it. And it's just wrong.
The oil prices are already ridiculously high, and one of the reasons is because they've been allowing all these mergers. So what's going to happen if they put somebody that's going to say, go for it, freebie?
Yeah, well, you mean gasoline prices are ridiculously high. Yes, the oil prices are going up because there's a finite amount of oil on the planet. But yes, absolutely right. And, in fact, I'll get into some more detail on that tomorrow. Ann, thank you for the call. Thanks for raising that. Our producer has redeemed herself in exchange for the mistaken Bushism feces story. Louise just provided me with George Bush offered up a new one. He says, this from the AP, August 5th, today. He says this is a speech he gave at the signing of the $417 billion defense spending bill. He said, our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. Think about it for a minute. No one in Bush's audience or military brass or Pentagon chiefs reacted. Bush was working his way toward a larger point. We must never stop thinking about how best to defend our country. We must always be forward thinking, he said. So he kind of, they never stop thinking about ways to harm our country, and neither do we, says George W. Bush. Thanks, Louise, for producing a great program today. Thanks, Ira Gravatt, for engineering it. Thank you to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. Thanks to our affiliate stations for carrying the show. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the folks in our chat room who showed up. Great conversation today. Thanks to Jay for our music. And thank you to you for listening. See you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children.